Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Dr. Jason Old here, surfer, historian, world traveler, and your host of the Surfing Historian Podcast. This season, we'll be diving deeper into the nuanced world of surfing and examining the historical, cultural, philosophical, and even scientific elements of the sport we're all stoked on. So let's paddle out together and ride through the world of academia. Joining me today from Nova Scotia, Canada, is Dr. Bettina Callery. Bettina is the Canada Research Chair in Sport Coaching and Adult Learning and is also an Associate Professor in the Department of Experiential Studies and Community and Sport at Cape Breton University in Nova Scotia. She researches coach education and development strategies, as well as psychosocial understandings of inclusive coaching. Bettina also leads the Community Active Sport Training and Learning Lab, in addition to being the editor-in-chief of the International Sport Coaching Journal. She's also recently published two books, Coach Education and Development in Sport, published by Routledge in 2020, as well as Coaching Masters Athletes, Advancing Research and Practice in Adult Sport, published by Routledge in 2021. Bettina's an avid surfer, and she's been an alpine ski coach for 25 years, with her coaching ranging from grassroots to national and World Cup level teams. For today's episode, we'll be chatting about Indigenous sport participation and her work with a fully Indigenous surf program on the island of Unamaki, more commonly known today as Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. This surf-centered initiative has developed programming specific to Mi'kmaq culture, predominantly due to the leaders and coaches' ways of knowing, a concept that she calls two-eyed seeing. I'm super stoked to have you on the show to share this information with our listeners. Bettina and I met at a conference at San Diego State University, and I was immediately inspired by her work with the Indigenous groups of Nova Scotia. Suffice it to say that I'm excited to have you on the show to hear more about this program. But before we get started, I want to personally thank you, Bettina, as well as our listeners, for being part of this episode of The Surfing Historian.
Thanks very much, Jason. Really looking forward to being here. So my research program more broadly is looking at inclusive sport coaching approaches, sort of the psychology and the sociology of coaching, especially marginalized groups like women coaches and aging adults. And today I'm going to talk to you about a newer branch of my research that's specific to Indigenous sport. So I'll tell you about how this came up. As you mentioned, I live on an island, Cape Breton Island, or Unamaki in Mi'kmaq. And there are five Indigenous communities on the island. And I work at an institution, Cape Breton University, that has a central mandate in a strategic plan to indigenize the Elnu Way, which is the Mi'kmaq term for the people. And We're all treaty people. We're building on our past and we're embracing new responsibilities. I was born and I grew up in Ottawa, which is Canada's capital, sort of in the middle of the country, on the traditional unceded territory of the Anishinaabeg Nation. But for the past 11 years, I've lived and worked and played in Mi'kma'ki, which is the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. So Unamagi is rich in environmental beauty and cultural traditions. It involves Mi'kmaq people, the Acadian or French Canadian culture, as well as Celtic history. And living in Cape Breton with many Indigenous people, as a Canada research chair, I'm impelled not just to acknowledge where I live, but also to support and provide service and to make a difference in my community. And I became interested in working on a participatory action research project with the Unamagi Surf Program, predominantly from seeing them at the beach and knowing the Mi'kmaq physical activity leaders. I'll refer to them as MPALs. And so there's an MPAL in each community who together run this program. So I was chatting with them at the beach, also at the ski hill, and at various different community physical activities that they're involved in. And I could see that there was something really special there. And I love surfing too, so that was a no-brainer. Maybe before I get more into that though, I need to bring you back on the history piece. And so in 1997, Davis wrote a book on the history of Mi'kmaq people in the Maritimes, and wrote about the settlement and invasion of French and English settlers in the 16th and 17th centuries that really disrupted the Mi'kmaq people's way of life. And when the French and the Acadians originally settled across the Maritimes, there were natural alliances that were formed between the groups. But then in the 18th century, there were more battles fought between the French and the English in the Maritimes, and the Mi'kmaq territories were invaded again. The British eventually conquered the Maritime regions and forced the Acadian settlers out. And in the mid-1700s, the Mi'kmaq chiefs signed a treaty of peace with the British with the intention of establishing similar partnerships that they had had with the French and the Acadians. Then came along the American Revolution, and the British eventually lost many North American colonies. So there's this whole history of land invasion and cultural disappropriation, and it doesn't really end in the 1800s. It's actually continued through our history. So for example, you may have heard of the residential schools that we had here in Canada. So they were religiously based, government-sponsored boarding schools that assimilated Indigenous children into Western culture. They started in the 1880s, and they actually continued until 1996. So Indigenous children were removed from their family homes and communities. Their names were often changed. They were forbidden to speak their language or wear their traditional clothes. Their culture was criticized, and they learned to be ashamed of their race and didn't really belong anywhere. So many were also abused. Many died and were buried in unmarked graves. You may have heard about this on the news recently. As a result of these residential schools, when and if they returned home, they had endured some pretty serious trauma. And that can still be seen across generations in the forms of substance and alcohol and other abuses. So the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada in 2015 created 94 calls to action. And one of which is specifically relating to sport programs that reflect diverse cultures of Indigenous people. When we look specifically at sport, Elias wrote this great book chapter on the sociological problem of sport in 1972, so ways back now, and wrote about the evolution of sport as closely aligned to European colonization, and wrote about how residential schools reflected colonial efforts of Euro-Canadians to use education, and maybe in this case specifically sport education, to achieve Indigenous assimilation into Canadian culture. Janice Forsyth, who's a leading scholar in this area, wrote about how sports in residential schools were critical sites, and I quote here, through which power was legitimized and exercised through Indigenous bodies. And the participation and integration of Indigenous participants in Euro-Canadian sports that were also led by Euro-Canadians really reflected government efforts to advance an administrative agenda that was focused on monitoring, controlling, and changing Indigenous practices. Another common Euro-Canadian philosophy of sport revolves around competition. The competitive and the hegemonic masculine narrative is really characteristic of contemporary interpretations of Western sport. Forsyth also discusses how Indigenous people in Canada have participated in sports for thousands of years, where Indigenous sport has been described as fun, medicinal, cultural, for purposes of building community, increasing fitness, teaching basic survival skills. And traditionally, sport was integral to the formation of individual and group identities, and also created harmony with environment and nature. And so we're coming back a little bit full circle to the idea of surfing here. While competition was part of sport participation in Indigenous culture, Rob Schenke and colleagues have written about the Western structured approach to teaching and practicing technical skills for competition. So, and how that conflicts with the games-based and experiential approach that's used by Indigenous people. So that's a lot of the sort of the background information on where we're coming from here. But Canada has made some good progress in building Indigenous sport programming. For example, there's the Canadian Long-Term Participant Development Pathway for Indigenous Sport for Life. So it's what it's done is it's adapted the conventional sort of mainstream pathway that we have in long-term development in sport to represent Indigenous ways of knowing, understanding holistic development, looking at cultural and spiritual, physical and mental dimensions of sport. We also have the Aboriginal coaching modules that are run through the National Coaching Certification Program in Canada. And there are three parts to these modules: holistic coaching, racism in sport, and community wellness. And the modules were designed for coaches of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit heritage, and we're responding directly to that, the calls for action and the need to incorporate a sport curriculum that reflects Aboriginal culture. But when my colleagues and I, so my colleagues, Joseph Gerges, Levi Denny, and I, we did a research project asking Mi'kmaq coaches about barriers to coaching. And one theme that came up was actually education. And they thought it wasn't enough to have one course that covered the needs of like the 630 plus First Nations groups, Métis people and Inuit groups across Canada. And they also talked about systemic racism and stereotypes of people assuming that they're lazy and they have no knowledge. So these were some of the barriers that they talked about. In another study, my colleagues and I looked at Mi'kmaq coaches' experiences, and we found that they took a multifaceted approach whereby they cared for the person first, acting oftentimes as a parent, a friend, a chauffeur, a chef, you know, whatever they needed, they were helping them with to support their personal development, not just their sport development. And they also talked about medicine wheel teachings, which has been adopted by several different Indigenous groups residing in Canada. So the medicine wheel is depicted as a circle, and it symbolizes life with no beginning or end. It's usually divided into four quadrants, but even though there is this division, the medicine wheel really is about everything contained within that circle is interconnected and equal. One important teaching focuses on the interrelated domains of life. So looking physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and the balance of these domains are suggested to achieve holistic health. So the coaches also talked about another concept that I'll mention now, and that was one that was actually coined by Mi'kmaq elder living in Unamagi that I've had the honor to speak with, Albert Marshall. And that concept is called two-eyed seeing. And it refers to an approach of seeing the world through both an Indigenous and a Western or European perspective. So the idea is that to use two-eyed seeing demonstrates one's ability to weave between Indigenous and Western perspectives without one perspective dominating the other. And it in turn sort of creates this hybrid approach to understanding and addressing different issues. So that's kind of the background information there.
No, that's awesome. Thank you so much. And, you know, I had someone on season one, Donald Wright, and he's written a book on Canadian history. He's written a number of things on Canadian history. I mean, he lives up there as well. But yeah, you know, I appreciate for myself personally, and I would imagine many of the listeners, you know, that little bit of background, that little bit of history, super helpful to contextualize, you know, your work and, you know, what you all are trying to accomplish in the face of, you know, as you said, racism and discrimination and certain things that the Mi'kmaq are facing. And so, you know, you mentioned this concept of, well, I have a whole host of questions for you. You've talked about what got you started but you know, why, one, I want to know what compelled you to work specifically with this group, but, beyond that, I guess this is a two-part question, but, beyond that, you mentioned two-eye seeing, and, you know, I talk about it in your intro that the coaches and the leaders take this approach to, these programs, but can you, for myself, and I would imagine many of the listeners, what does that look like? What does two-eye seeing look like? I understand you explain the concept, but how does that translate on the...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Ground.
Yeah. So that's a great question. And it's actually, maybe both of your questions are kind of rolled into one. because I think that in doing this participatory action research, you know, that two-eyed seeing approach was integral to that research, because I'm a colonial settler. And I was working with all my Indigenous partners. And so it was really important that we could both support and understand each other by taking that two-eyed seeing approach, where we could understand that, you know, sort of how are we looking at this? What perspective are we taking here? And what is the other perspective? And what does that look like? And how is that, how does that sort of unroll in terms of what it is that we're doing? And I guess that in terms of what compelled me to do this research, you know, I was going to the beach every year, and you know, in 2019, I was watching the Mi'kmaq Surf Program unfolding, and the years before that as well. So I'll tell you that this is what it looks like. So the program is 8 weeks long in July and August, and it's for Mi'kmaq youth age 13 to 18. Every Tuesday they meet, they head to the beach, and they're there from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. And each of the MPALs for their community is responsible for bringing this group of youth from their community to the beach. And sometimes they're traveling pretty far distances. It's a big island, you know, they're traveling like an hour and a half to get there. So they come via buses or minivans or by car. There's also a coach or two, and typically a surf leader who was previously a youth in the program and who's kind of aged out, who's there to provide instruction and oversee the youth in the water. There's lifeguards on the beach. On Tuesdays, the surfers in this program are allowed to surf between the flags that normally are reserved for swimmers. So that's kind of nice because they've got that supervision as well. The MPALs bring in lunch and hang around kind of at the back of the beach or on the boardwalk or parking lot area. And they also sometimes, you know, go surfing themselves. The youth are pretty independent at the beach, but there's also a lot of supervision built around them. So as much as they feel independent, they're still, you know, young, they're still young. And so they still need some supervision. The surf equipment is in a hut at the beach and it's ready to go when they arrive. And the one other kind of fun thing about this program is that there's no cell phone coverage at this beach. So, you know, there was something really special about this program. The youth would all come, nobody's checking their phones. They'd surf for hours, you know, they'd walk the beach or swim or skimboard or snorkel or whatever, you know. And then COVID hit, and there was no program in 2020. So I reached out to the MPALs because I wanted to support the program and make sure that it would come back strong. Levi Denny, who's one of my co-authors and one of my collaborators on this project, he told me that the program had in the past had various different education initiatives built into the programming. So things like having a marine biologist come in and talk to the youth about life under their boards in the water, like they drew out a board and like thought about how much space that takes up and what would potentially be growing underneath there or swimming underneath there. They've also done things like CPR training. So various different kind of initiatives like that. And so as a group in the winter of 2021, we started to come up with a plan, and that was to explore Mi'kmaq ways of knowing about place-based cultural sport participation from the perspectives of the coaches and the youth involved in the Unamagi Surf Program. And so we would do so by hosting surfboard painting workshops during the program. So year one, which was the summer of 2021, was really about relationship building. As I mentioned, I'm a colonial researcher. I needed to build trust and credibility with the group. And as I knew some of the MPALs going in, and so I volunteered as a supporting coach and as a mentor for the surfing leader who had aged out of the program. So he's also a Mi'kmaq coach. And I hung out with the MPALs and the youth, the parents who were there, or anybody else who was at the beach, and I got to know them. I also took the Aboriginal coaching modules, and I reflected on the program in general. There was another surf instructor there who was also non-Indigenous. And in that first year, I was really struck by tensions between sort of the Western or the Eurocentric goals of a surf program generally and the unwritten but pretty clearly communicated goals of the Unamagi Surf Program. So I just want you to take a minute here, Jason, to think about a typical surf school. So the clients get a rental board and a suit. The instructor spends a dedicated 1 or 2 hours in the water with the goal to get the surfers standing, learning technique, ocean safety, right? So all this good stuff. But as the surf leader explained to me that summer, they were at the beach for 5 hours. Everyone wanted to relax and enjoy themselves. He actually felt his job was much more relational with the youth and with the land and water. And in creating free play opportunities. There was nothing about the urgency of getting everyone standing on a board. There was no technical focus per se. Sure, they spoke about it and yeah, they improved. But there were really different understandings of the coaching role. And I think that in thinking through that, that can create a lot of tension with Indigenous versus Western-based conceptions of the ways to coach effectively. And I realized that can also kind of have carryover effects on hiring practices or on paying Indigenous coaches. So for me in year one, it was really important to follow the Indigenous ways of delivering this program. And for this to work, in which I, as a non-Indigenous researcher, was working with my Indigenous collaborators, that two-eyed seeing approach that you were referring to before, I needed to be aware of really developing mutual interests, co-developing that research and co-evaluating that process so that we could develop mutual benefits and long-term relationships. So for me, it was actually a really big compliment when one of the parents dropped off his kid at the beach one day and assumed I was Indigenous. And he was confused when he asked where I was from, and I didn't answer that I lived in one of the five Mi'kmaq communities. Because for me, that really signified that it looked like I really fit in with the group and that I was you know, part of what was going on there. And I can't really underscore enough the importance of understanding and following the cultural ways of the program and how it unfolded, and being supportive and adapting my research to what was happening. So in the fall of 2021, I was invited to support the group in the filming of an episode for the show Going Native. So I hung back out of the camera's focus, but I watched the whole thing kind of unfold. And, you know, it was a Tuesday during the day. There were lots of kids who came out for this filming. And so I asked one of them, I said, how come you're able to come here and you don't have to be at school? And as if it was like totally normal, they responded that the school was closed because they hadn't had any water for 3 days. So like, this community is 45 minutes from the city, and I hadn't even heard that there was a problem with the water there. You know, there's so much for me to learn from this, and so much for everybody to learn from this. And so anyways, at that event, one of the MPALs gave me an Unamagi Surf Program sweatshirt. And for me, again, it symbolized my acceptance and a thanks for being involved. And it meant that as we proceeded with the workshops the following year, we were really in a great space to conduct ethical and community-based and respectful research. And I can't really underscore enough that that process has to take time, and it needs to be considered as part of the research process in these types of sort of action research with Indigenous collaborators. So I guess then next was year two. So during the summer of 2022, I again was part of the Unamagi Surf Program every week. This time I actually had a bit of a research team with me, my colleague, Simon Barrick, and research assistant, Julie Barrybow. And so we went to the beach every week. We held workshops on two occasions. And in these workshops, we gave the youth surfboards with blank white bottoms, and they'd been prepared for painting. And they were encouraged to paint the meaning that surfing has on their lives. So the questions that they had were, what does being Mi'kmaq mean to you? And illustrate your cultural identity and what the Unamagi Surf Program means to you. They were given some prompts, like they were told to think about connection to land, life, physical activity, their body and movement, social or cultural or spiritual connections, mental health, Mi'kmaq terms and words, and petroglyphs and clan animals. And so those had been developed through different conversations with the MPALs and with different Mi'kmaq sport leaders. So we took photos, we did video, we did audio recordings during the workshops, also while the youth were surfing and on the beach. And so we had 9 youth that painted 4 surfboards. So 2 of them were painted by individuals, and 2 of them were painted in groups. And then we took field notes from our observations, and there was the audio from the conversations that we had, as well as the boards. And we also ended up having a really great discussion I mentioned before with Elder Albert Marshall. So the big findings from our research was that the Mi'kmaq program adaptations where cultural and place-based aspects were prioritized, shifted the goals of the program away from something that was technically focused towards understanding surfing as a means of connecting with water, to supporting growth despite intergenerational trauma, and to building and supporting Indigenous communities. So would you like me to speak about these three themes now?
Yeah, of course. Okay. As you were talking, I was thinking to myself, you know, how does surfing fit more broadly into this? And you were already kind of making your way, segueing into that. And but before you do get into some of the more specifics of it, I am just curious as to how surfing, when surfing was introduced and how. And the only reason I ask, well, one, I'm curious, but I know that, you know, in the case of my research with, you know, in Nicaragua, I and a number of others look at this concept, you know, outside of Nicaragua, surf settler colonialism. And so, a theme that obviously you've mentioned colonialism multiple times already. And so surf settler colonialism, which, you know, I think is somewhat self-explanatory, but that is in effect how surfing began to proliferate in Nicaragua. It was then adopted and maybe even adapted to a certain extent by the locals. And now they, the beautiful part of the story, I think, is how they just completely dominate the lineups. And so, but it was through varying forms of surf settler colonialism, or even, varying forms of imperialism, you might even say, that surfing was then introduced and was able to later proliferate throughout these communities. So I want to bring it back to you and specifically up in Nova Scotia. How was surfing introduced? And I know you talked a bit about how this fits more broadly into this program you have, but how is it introduced? And then, you know, let's get into some of the specifics like you were about to talk about.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. Surfing is not a Mi'kmaq sport. It didn't originate here, as you know. And so it has been introduced. They started the Unamagi Surf Program in 2013, and they also do a snowboarding program in the wintertime. So I think you can kind of compare both of these really as a way of being physically active outdoors, because the connection to the land creates a little bit of a cultural connection and allows the youth to understand how they are using and playing with and living in the land and being physically active at the same time. And in particular, the Unamagi Surf Program was started with sort of the largest Indigenous community in Cape Breton, in Eskazoni, and then it expanded out to include the other four communities as well. And this was done really intentionally as a means to bring the youth from these communities together who normally wouldn't necessarily get to know one another that well. And so it was removed enough. It's not far from one of the communities, but it's removed enough from the other communities that they do need to be bused in. And then they're there for the day. And so it provides that sort of community connection for them. And so when I talk about the adaptations that were made to the program, it's basically that the surfing was introduced and is known around Nova Scotia as the way that it's been brought into this particular geographic culture from a Eurocentric perspective. So surfing was not originally developed and played by the Mi'kmaq, and that's how it was adapted in that way. And I think in terms of these themes, what we see that speaks to that specifically too, is that the study participants really spoke at length about the importance of water. I made the example before when I was saying that they don't necessarily always have water in their communities. They don't take for granted that they can just turn on a tap and that clean water will come out. You know, the importance of the water, the ocean, and also the land for Mi'kmaq people generally, but also for their own individual mental health and environmental awareness. And so surfing really became the means for the youth to connect with the water in this way. The program was also really important to help the youth feel safe in new environments outside of their own communities. And that goes back to the idea that the community or the program integrated the youth from all of the five communities. What we saw was that these youth might be living with impacts of intergenerational trauma that I was talking about before, resulting from that systemic racism by the Canadian state and through the residential school system. And that the lasting effects of systemic racism can contribute to lots of different negative outcomes, economic issues, social issues, health and well-being that are all facing the Mi'kmaq communities. What we saw in the data and in the ways that the boards were painted was that there were instances where the youth appeared to have internalized the belief that they need to be perfect or better than colonial society so that they aren't judged as lazy. So a couple of the boards were really, really meticulously painted, and other youth involved in the program said that they couldn't possibly paint something so nice. And so they weren't going to paint the boards. Nonetheless, they talked to us about things that they would paint on there, like hands all coming together in a show of love and family. So that was really interesting to see as well. And I'm going to get back to that in a moment. But the other thing that we saw was that the surf program prioritized building relationships and community to support strengthening of life skills. So it really did build community amongst the youth. And what we see is the structure of this program helps to build that. So there were the two former participants who are now leaders of the program that were supporting youth engagement as sort of the next generation of community sport leaders, and who had an incredible impact on the youth in and out of the water as well, like outside of the water as they were having discussions, on the beach while they were painting the surfboards. Like, it was really incredible to hear the ways in which they would listen to each other and sort of internalize that and start to build their own confidence through listening to some of these to these leaders. And then you also have the MPALs, right? And these other sport leaders who really acted as role models for these kids. And so instead of working on technical surf skills, these leaders prioritized relationship building with the youth and supported the strengthening of their life.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Skills.
Yeah, Bettina, it sounds like a really amazing, you know, program and project that you guys are working on there. And I do remember seeing the surfboards, the painted surfboards at the conference we both attended in San Diego. And I thought that was pretty striking. It was pretty awesome. And, you know, for the listener who, you know, weren't at the conference with us, what were some common themes that you found on those surfboards? I know, you know, you mentioned many of the individuals kind of on the side, off the record, if you will, told you what they would have painted. But what were some of the more common themes you found on the surfboards specifically?
And so we named the four surfboards just for ease of, like, as we are going through them to be able to discuss them. So maybe I'll talk to you about the names of them and why they were named as such. So the first one was one that we called the party board. And it's like really bright and full of color and full of activity and energy. Like, you look at this and you're like, wow, like, cool, you know? and so this one was also named the party board because it was painted by five youth together all at the same time. And it was like they jumped off the bus and they saw this workshop had been set up at the beach. You know, we had a tent and we had the boards out and we had the paints out and all this kind of thing. And they just like ran over and they were like, cool, let's do this. And they just immediately wanted to paint it. And I was like, wait, we have questions, you know? So, and they were laughing and they were like throwing paint around and they were joking and they were just like really enjoying themselves painting this. So, I mean, you can see water and sand and sunshine and handprints and rainbows and also like red sort of fiery stuff sort of all around the board. The next board was one of the ones that I mentioned that was like really meticulously crafted and it took several weeks to complete. And it's called the four-point star. So the four-point star shows the four compass directions. And it sort of speaks to the importance of maintaining balance in the external environment and within oneself. So it's got the four-point star on it. It's also got a little bit of a beach sort of landscape. And it's got hieroglyphs that's in Mi'kmaq are mean water is life. The next board is another one that was done by an individual, also very, very carefully crafted and took several weeks. It also has actually the same wave pattern as what was on the previous one as well. So I think they kind of were like looking at each other's and going like, yeah, I like that. And I'm going to do that too. This one is called Samquam. And Samquam means water in Mi'kmaq. And that was actually written onto the board. Well, so there's a blue sort of ocean strip. And then the word Samquam kind of comes through that in white writing. And then there's also a tree with roots that go down and sort of a sunset or sunrise potentially in the background as well. So really, really cool. And the last one we called Divided, and it was painted by two participants who actually didn't work together at all on the board. And they were new to the program. They had never surfed before. And I was surprised. They made this board. There is the Mi'kmaq flag on it. There's also an eagle head. there's also like various different, there's a handprint. There's various different sort of symbols, like a communist symbol on it. But there's a divide in the board. So there's a line right through the middle. And so one of the youth painted the top half and the other youth painted the bottom half. These youth in particular, they got their wetsuits and they went into the change room and they changed and they came out and they had their wetsuits on back to front with the zipper at the front, which is, you know, sort of a common mistake for people whose first time it is to put on a wetsuit. But some of the youth immediately sort of said, oh, well, you got that on backwards, right? And one of them immediately said, oh, I did that before too. Don't worry about it, you know, but there was also giggling and whatever. So they went back in and they changed and one of them put his suit on properly and the other one just didn't put it back on. He did go in the water, but he just decided he wasn't going to wear a wetsuit. So they were kind of embarrassed. They seemed very quiet, very shy. And then when they got out in the water, it's like they came alive. They had this board. They had one board between the two of them. And they were both chit-chatting away and enjoying the waves and riding the waves, just going in typically on their tummy or on their knees. And they were being helped by the instructor there too. And you know, it was really beautiful to see how they opened up in the water. So that was really cool. So those are the four boards.
Yeah, no, I remember, you know, the pictures you showed us and, you know, thank you for explaining that for, you know, for the listeners so they could kind of get that image. And, you know, I really, really liked, you know, something I guess they painted on there, you know, the idea that water is life and, you know, it's, you know, and then you talk about, you know, even after the debacle with the wetsuit, you know, they're out in the water and as you said, they came to life and, you know, Puerto Rico, but there's, I have a number of friends that use this expression, like after you're finished surfing, they'll say, if it's a guy, they'll say like, estoy curado, like I'm cured. And, you know, it's just an expression, but I think there's more to it than they realize. And I think in explaining that connection, these individuals had with the ocean really helps, to make sense of an expression that some of these surfers just kind of say, just it's like after they're done, they're like, ah, oh, you know, I'm quote unquote cured, which there's a lot of truth to that. And I think all the people listening that surf, I know myself, probably you, and clearly these individuals that you were just talking about were cured or just thoroughly stoked to be out in the water. And so that kind of brings me to a question I had. And as far as the boards and the paintings, it seemed like a lot of the symbols really were sort of indicative of Mi'kmaq culture, and they reflected that in their paintings, which is, you know, also, you know, a beautiful thing as well. But my question beyond surfing, what connection historically do these individuals, do these groups have to the ocean? And the reason I ask is because I know I've referenced the local Nicaraguan surfers, which, by the way, that community that I work with is a highly indigenous community. And so they have a very intimate connection to the ocean through fishing, and they even have myths associated with the ocean and just sort of grappling with some of the things that have gone on in and around their culture that surrounding the ocean. So does the Mi'kmaq, are these individuals you work with, what connection beyond surfing do they have to the ocean?
Yeah, there's definitely a strong connection. So they live on an island. We live on an island. So naturally there's ocean all around us. There's also on our island is actually the largest, I believe it's the largest saltwater lake in North America. It's right in the middle of the island. There's this huge saltwater lake, right? It's part of the ocean. and so there has been and there always has been a huge reliance and a connection with fishing canoeing, paddling, swimming, you know, all of these things have always been very integral to their ways of life. I think that one other thing that I'll kind of touch on, and it kind of goes, it does go back to the surfing. So to bring it back to surfing, you know, I think that the understanding of the ways that they are working with, playing with the land and the water to create community and personal well-being is quite incredible. Like, so, you know, the ocean has many unknowns. At the Surf and Skate Conference in San Diego, I think you were in the session when we were kind of looking at and making a comparison and having a discussion between ocean and wave pools. And I definitely knew which camp I was in. you know, the ocean's unknowns are challenging and inspiring, and also create a vulnerability that people can't ignore. And yet we saw in this surf program that despite, or maybe because of the vulnerability that's inherent in being in the water, there was also a psychological safety. There was a, you know, it was a safe environment for the youth that'll help them to overcome some of that intergenerational trauma in and through surfing in particular. And that they feel safe as a community in this vulnerability. I mean, that they can connect to the environment and to each other and to their cultural heritage through this program. You know, that totally got me stoked. So, I mean, surfing can do that, right? I've always been really passionate about outdoor sports. I grew up inland, so I took up alpine skiing when I was 2 years old, and I've skied and I've coached all over the world. I love traveling, and skiing has afforded me those possibilities. And I love being on mountains because of the peace I feel when I'm skiing, especially when I'm relatively alone on the mountain. And I feel the same way when surfing, you know, having learned that sport, this sport as an adult, and having had the opportunity to surf all over the world as well. You know, I think I'm very fortunate that the surf beach that I go to, that the Unamagi Surf Program is on, it almost never has crowds. You know, that's pretty rare. sometimes I'm completely alone there. Sometimes there are others there, but we never really have to worry about some of the surf etiquette that goes along with the crowded waves. And it's really just, it's pure joy. It's exhilaration. It's respect for the ocean and for yourself and for others. And when you add the program, the youth from the program, so the community aspect to that and the cultural pride that I saw, you know, to that mix, then I think it's a really incredible thing.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, as you're talking about surfing alone up in Nova Scotia, I'm thinking, I'm like, well, I mean, you're probably going to be hard pressed to get me up there. That's some cold water. And, you know, I was also kind of laughing at, you know, obviously you and I and a number of others surfed together in San Diego, and it was actually pretty cold that day, but you seem pretty comfortable, like, you know, right at home while I was freezing. But, yeah, so I'm really curious to know, you know, we have on our website, surfinghistorian.com, information about the Surfing Association of Nova Scotia. And I'm curious to know, how does the Mi'kmaq surf program fit into that broader surfing association, or is it that surfing association? I'm just curious to know, and I'm sure some of the listeners would like to know how it fits in that broader surfing program or association.
It's affiliated with SANS, the Surfing Association of Nova Scotia. It always has been. The last couple of years that I've been involved in particular, SANS has been also part of the collaboration in terms of getting it back up and going, and also in terms of finding some applying for federal grants to help employ the surf leaders. And so they've always been part of that process. The equipment is all owned by the MPALs, but again, sort of the funding that they applied for to receive those were in collaboration with SANS. So it's definitely, it's part of sort of the understanding of looking at diversity initiatives within SANS.
Awesome. Yeah. I was happy to be able to put that up on our website, and, you know, I'm trying to create this broader resource really for people who want to get more involved with these groups, and whether it's up there where you are, or, you know, in say in somewhere in Africa or over in the South Pacific. But and thank you for sending me that information too, by the way. So Bettina, you know, I want to go ahead and give you the last word, and I have, you know, a question for you, and perhaps relates to you and your colleagues more broadly, but how has your work with the Mi'kmaq and these communities and seeing their approaches to life, how has that impacted you and your colleagues? Like, what can you sort of take away from their ways of living in life?
So, I mean, that's a great question. And I think there's a lot to be taken from that. So, you know, sport in general is a field that's associated with healthy living and positive life skill development, all sorts of great things. But sport is also plagued with like dominant cultural norms that are very male-centric, very ableist, very ageist, performance-oriented, sort of this idea of like winning at all costs. And it can result in really psychologically unsafe and abusive environments, especially for marginalized groups and people. And this research really turns that on its head. You know, when along with other projects that I've looked at and understanding sort of marginalized populations in sport, I've started to reconceptualize sport and leadership, and develop an alternative and more inclusive philosophical orientation that's very much based on some of the things that we've discussed here today. And it's also a position sport as a means for understanding and appreciating the environment and the community's connection to land and to water. And there's so much that we can learn from that and that we can take from that for a more sustainable future in and out of sport.
If you enjoyed my conversation with Bettina about her surf-centered initiative in Nova Scotia, I'd like to invite you to check out my next episode, where I'll be joined by communication scholar, Dr. Bree Iatarola. Bree and I will be talking about the historical transformation of El Salvador and other parts of Central America as a result of surf tourism. We'll also be chatting about the impacts of sea level rise at Trestles in San Clemente, California since 2016, as well as the environmental challenges that the coastal communities of San Clemente and Southern California more broadly face. If learning about this type of research gets you stoked, then this will be an episode you won't want to miss. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Surfing Historian. If you're stoked on these conversations, be sure to share, like, and subscribe to never miss an episode. And don't forget to check out our killer merch at surfinghistorian.com. Proceeds go to help keep this amazing podcast going strong. Until next time, stay stoked.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big.